so we want to define security protocols. We want to see when a protocol security realizes a given task. So how are we going to do it? So there's this great paradigm that says what we're going to do. We're going to first devise an ideal protocol for this task, and this protocol will basically, in this protocol, the parties will give the input to a trusted party, and the trusted party will locally compute the outputs, give them back to the parties, and disappear. In fact, if you want to do it many times, you can do it many times with the same trusted party, but everything else is ideal. And then we say that the protocol is securely realized the task if running the protocol looks like running the ideal protocol to the trusted party. Okay, so that's the basic idea that we all know and love by now. But then the question is, of course, how to formalize it. So there is the basic approach for formalizing, and it basically goes back to the zero knowledge, and in fact, you can trace it even back to public encryption. And then for protocols, I think the first paper to actually formalize it in this way was Beaver. And then it was formalized in many other settings, many other papers. So the question is how to define what it means for a protocol to look like, running the protocol to look like running the protocol. So what do we do? What we say is that for any adversary that interacts with the protocol, we want that there exists a simulator, an adversary has to interact with a trusted party, such that no external distinguisher can tell whether it interacts with the adversary and the protocol or with the trusted party and the simulator. Great. But of course, there's many more details to specify, as we know. But there is a very nice general appeal to this notion. First, it's very general. We can specify almost any set of requirements for any task. It's very intuitive. We have a very clear view of what we are getting in the end, or at least we think so. Because there's a trusted party that does whatever you want it to do, and there's a code that we can verify, and everything looks great. And also, it seems kind of inherently composable in the way we define it, because in the definition itself, we say that no external distinguisher can tell whether it's running with this or that, and this is essentially what you want for composition, right? No environment on the side can tell between the protocol execution and the execution. So everything looks really great. But the question is, do really existing formulation deliver this this nice promise? So, a priori, it seems that this is the case, right? Because we have a bunch of great many sequence of works with different settings and different properties, and we can capture practically any task with very fine granularity of requirements, of specified requirements, and we have very nice composability results. Concurrent for concurrent execution for some models, for non-concurrent composition for some models, for concurrent execution for other models, and we seem to be in good shape. Things start to go wrong a little bit when we use trusted setup. So what do I mean by trusted setup? So trusted setup is, as you know, is very common in cryptography. So one example is a public infrastructure for authentication and encryption, right? You need to have some significant authority that holds public keys that everybody can retrieve in an authenticated way. We also talk about common reference string for protocols that we talked about, we heard a lot about. And we know that in many cases, some type of setup is essential. So we cannot do authentication without some type of PKI, without anything. I don't want to say PKI, just from scratch, we cannot do authentication, we have to get something. For instance, no interactive zero knowledge. We cannot do in the plain model, we have to have some setup, common reference string works. And then when you talk about universally composable security, which we've heard a lot, there's also those possibility results that Manoj and other people were talking about before. So we need setup to do things well. But things start to go wrong when you use setup in our definitions. So one early warning sign is the issue of transferability in order to access zero knowledge in the common framework. So let me spend a couple of minutes on that. So what's the zero knowledge? So just ideal zero knowledge. That in the ideal model, what would they? Would we have a trusted party for zero knowledge, right? What would the trusted party do? It would get from the prover, it would get the public input X and the secret witness W. And there is this relation R of X and W that the verifier wants to verify. And what the trusted party will send to the verifier is just the public input X and the 1-bit value of the relation on X, on R of the 1-bit value of R on X and W. Right? So the verifier gets perfect correctness and the prover is guaranteed perfect secrecy. So that's the idea of zero knowledge. And then how do non-interactive zero knowledge protocols look in the common reference ring model? So there is a common reference ring. It's just a string chosen from some a priori given distribution that is given to both parties, right? And then in addition, the prover has again this public input X and the secret input witness W. And then he sends to the verifier X with some proof that he computed based on those things, and the verifier verifies the output to be 0-1. So those how to do things look, and we have those novel ways of proving that protocols in this setting are zero knowledge using the paradigm, the trusted party paradigm that we talked about before. But look what's going on here. So in the idea of zero knowledge is not transferable. What do I mean by transferable? So the verifier cannot later convince a third party that the theorem is correct, right? He got from the trusted party, this ideal trusted party, this 1B that convinces the verifier that the theorem is correct. But if the verifier then goes to another person on the street, right, to convince him, he can't, right? Because he just got this bit for himself. And indeed, in the standard models, zero knowledge protocols have the same property, right? So I interact with the prover, and I interact with the meet. The meet convinces me that the theorem is correct, great, but then I cannot go later and convince Tal that the theorem is correct. But in the common reference string model, it's different, because in the common reference string model, if the common reference string is public, it's very easy for me to go and get the proof that I got from a meet and just show the proof to Tal, and Tal will immediately get convinced that the theorem is correct, right? Because just as the public verification algorithm. So something is wrong here, right? We thought we are getting everything that we expected to get from this trusted party, but we're not really. So of course, people have been seeing, noticed it a long time ago, and in fact, there is an approach for a solution, right? It's very clean and elegant, beautiful approach of how to solve this, you know, on a protocol level. So let's modify the setup a bit, and let's say that the verifier has a public key and a corresponding secret key, right? And then you modify the protocol. Now the prover will not just prove the theorem from before, but just prove the following theorem: either the statement is correct, or I know the secret key or the corresponds to the public key of the verifier. So now the proof doesn't work anymore. The transferability doesn't work anymore, right? Because the meet proved to me that either statement is correct or he knows the my secret key, and then I try to prove to Tal to show to give her the proof. But of course she doesn't believe it because she knows I know my secret key, right? So why should she believe that the theorem is correct? So great. So it seems that we've solved the problem and we can do things in a non-transferable way. But we have some bad taste in the mouth, right? Because what's going on here? So first, is it really true that it looks great, the solution, but does it really work? And how can we prove that it works? How can we really capture its property and then prove that this solution works? Maybe it doesn't work. And more deeply, okay, so we have this issue of transferability, which we may or may not care about, but maybe there are other loopholes in definition, right? So in the notion of security, not just this issue of transferability, it seems that something is wrong with the modeling. And if we try to look at the model, see where did the model fail? Why doesn't the model capture this property? So so maybe if we go to stronger notions, stronger formulation of security than just no interactive zero knowledge, maybe the problem is solved there, right? Because you have this universally composable notion that we just heard last talk how great it is, and it guarantees security for everything, and composition with arbitrary protocols, in particular, maybe composition with arbitrary protocols that are run on the side with Tal, try to convince her that the theorem is correct. So maybe this will solve the problem. But it turns out that no, that even if we look about, even if this protocol that Amit and I are running is universally composable in the core reference string model, even then I can do exactly the same thing, it just give Tal the proof and Tal will be convinced. Okay, as long as Tal has access to the same core reference string that Amit and I were using. So the same problems happens here too. So it looks weird. And furthermore, there are other examples. If you look at the other protocols, which are usually secure in the common reference string model, have actually the same property. In particular, in Kinetic Fishing, there are two UC commitment protocols. One that works for a single commit or single value, and one that works for committing for multiple values for the same reference string. If you look at the first protocol, and you try to say Amit commits to me with this protocol, and then I try to commit to Tal with the same common reference string, then of course I can do malleability attacks. So it's not just an issue of transferability and deniability, we can actually do more serious damage. And indeed, that paper noticed it, that's why it actually went ahead and constructed a second protocol that allows to commit to multiple values with the same reference string. So it solved the problem on the protocol level, but it didn't really solve the essential issue of what's going on here with composability when many parties use the same reference string. Okay, so how people have been developing all kind of workarounds and solutions and non-solutions. And let me just mention a few. So Manoj was actually talking about just before. So we don't know how to deal with composability of common reference string. Let's just get rid of it and just do composability or security without any such reference string. And then we don't run into these problems. Great, but then as we've seen, so inherently to get weaker notion of security. So this is, again, doesn't really solve the problem. We can use universal composition with joint state. If you don't know what it is, never mind, that doesn't matter for now, but if you do know what it is, it really doesn't solve the problem either, because it only talks about how a bunch of specially designed protocols can use the same common reference string together. But those protocols have to be specifically designed to work together with each other and not to interfere with each other when they use the same common reference string or the same setup in general. But there's nothing that's said about how this fares with other protocols, arbitrary other protocols that may be using the same reference string. In particular, the same attack that we talked about before work even for protocols that comply with the joint state security. So another kind of non-solution is to let's move to another setup. Instead of talking about common reference string, we can do general computation, realize general functionalities. If we have a public key infrastructure with knowledge, that means that somehow it's guaranteed that the partners know the secret keys. And in fact, the protocol the protocols that are developed in such a model are not susceptible to those transferability attacks, right? You cannot just do this transferability with those protocols. But again, it's a property of the protocols, and the idea there again is essentially the same as the one that I described before of Jacobson et al. That wasn't the goal there, but it just comes out of the protocol. But again, it doesn't solve the problem, because how do we capture this property? How do we prove that the protocol has this property that you cannot do these weird things when many arbitrary protocols use the same setup?
The JSI protocol has an issue with the fact that they have to somehow conduct the proof of knowledge, you know, the secret key of the public key of the verifier. And it, in fact, that's something very hard to guarantee. So
right.
What happens in your protocol?
So now in this protocol, it comes for free. Sorry, it comes for free, come easy for free because well, the setup actually guarantees that the guy knows it, because in the setup, I know the secret key. I'm giving the secret key.
It's
for
like
the
a trusted setup.
The trusted setup. The ideal functionality gives me the secret key.
Either that, or you give the secret key.
So this is part of the trusted setup. So you, when you trust the setup, you trust that the setup gave the secret key to everybody.
So they get it for free in that sense also.
Yeah.
But I'm saying when they actually implement it.
When you want to implement it, you have to, right.
And it's not trivial to do.
I agree. No, but that's a separate issue, how to get rid of the setup and realize in real life.
I mean,
so even with the setup,
CRS.
I have problems.
In
so
CRS also, it's hard to guarantee that really what the information is drawn according to the right distribution. In fact, the similar it doesn't.
So, in fact, if you want to guarantee UC, you know that it's not only hard to guarantee, it's impossible to actually guarantee it completely without the setup. But I'm saying, I'm willing to leave the setup, I just want to guarantee this type of security when arbitrary many protocols use the same setup.
So again, the main point of this is that you want this sort of chosen protocol attack, right? You want that an outside protocol that's designed by an adversary. If the adversary said it's secure in some funny way, then it'll still be secure in that funny way, even if your protocols are running.
So now I'm talking about an adversary that I've seen the setup, and I've seen my protocol, and I've designed another protocol with the same setup that wants to interfere badly with my.
Not interfere badly with it, but you want that his protocol should also be secure if it was secure beforehand.
Right.
So you want
to say secure, but we maintain the same properties that it had, whatever they were.
Right. So our protocol should interfere with his protocol.
Exactly.
So
Okay. Good point. So the question is how to guarantee that. This is what we try to do with this paper. So in particular, we have a new notion, which is a strengthened variant of UC, which we call generalized UC. And this notion, so first, it's also preserved under universal composition. It also implies the traditional UC notion, and it guarantees security even with global server. So this is, of course, inherently an informal statement, because what does it mean to guarantee security? But we'll see that actually has properties that we expect it to have. At least it explicitly deals with the issue with the global setup, and many arbitrary protocols use the same setup. And in particular, that's one thing that we can say, it guarantees non-transferability. But it's also informal, because we didn't formally define non-transferability, but you'll know it when you see it.
So is it the same as saying it guarantees deniability?
Not transferability, deniability, just using it interchangeably for the same property.
Setup is
well, deniability is kind of a loaded term, because there's the issue of deniability in this sense of deniable zero knowledge, and there's also deniability in the sense of deniable encryption, which is totally a different issue. That's why I didn't use this word.
So the setup is part of the definition, or is that part of the definition? Of the general as you see, does it include setup as part of the definition?
You see. So without setup, it just collapses to all UC. With setup, it starts doing everything.
So with UC setup, it's weaker or stronger?
With setup, it's always stronger. It always implies UC.
No,
in some cases, it collapses to UC. In other cases, it's going to be actually strictly stronger.
Stronger than UC with setup, right?
Yeah.
It's weaker than UC
from the setup, but with human setup, it's stronger.
Yeah. So they have this new notion, and then we also have a construction for realizing any functionality in this GUCCQA, given reasonable, in some sense, minimal setup. And I'll try to justify these words. And just to mention that there are another paper that was written concurrently, independently of this paper, that has the same motivation as SAPS, and they have a different formalization, a different strengthening of UC, which is related, and a different protocol that in a different setup assumption. I won't talk about that. Maybe I'll mention it as we go along towards the end. Anyway, so let's in order to understand the new definition, let's go back and look at UC security. So here's UC security at a glance in one slide. So remember the trusted party paradigm. So you have a protocol. We want to say when this protocol securely realizes some trusted party code that gives some additional functionality. So what we do? So we first devise a model for running the protocol, and this would be a natural model. So first, all parties, so there's this environment, which is an entity that sits up there. It gives input to the parties, also gives input to an adversary. And then the parties start communicating with each other, actually do it via the adversary, but never mind. And the adversary sees all the communication between the parties and actually can control the communication. And in the end, the parties output whatever the protocol tells them to output. Their outputs go to the environment. So that's the model for protocol execution. And on the other hand, there is this ideal process. And the process, from the point of view of the environment, up here looks the same. The environment gives the inputs to the parties, but now the parties are just dummy parties and just forward their inputs to this trusted party that runs the functionality. The functionality gets the inputs from all the parties, and the adversary, which is the simulator, gives the outputs back, and everybody outputs from the good parties, output whatever they got from the functionality, the simulator outputs whatever it wants, and they send it back to the environment. And if it's a reactive functionality, this thing can go over and over, can continue. And then we say that the protocol securely realizes the task if for any adversary here, there exists an adversary here, simulated such that no environment can tell whether it's interacting with this process or with that process. Okay, so that's UC at a glance. And just to say that what's crucial here in the UC is that the environment and the adversary can talk freely throughout the protocol. So this this kind of side channel between the environment and the adversary, or with the simulator, is what guarantees this strong composability properties. So, if you've been here in September, we discussed it a lot. Never mind. So, but just one thing to say, which is relevant to us, that the model restricts the environment. The definitions restricts the environment. The environment can interact with only a single protocol instance throughout the execution in the experiment that I described before. And furthermore, no subroutine of the parties running the protocol can be directly accessed by the environment, right? So if I go back, never mind, just go back here. So if I go back, that means that those parties may have subroutines, right? This can be a complex system here. Those subroutines never talk directly to the environment. The environment can only talk to a set of parties that run the code of Pi in a single instance, meaning a single session ID of the protocol. Okay, so this is a restriction in the model, and this restriction actually is very important in the model because it really simplifies the analysis. But it really talks, it forces the environment to interact with a single session. Means that the analysis can only talk, can get away with just discussing a single session of the protocol that interacts with the environment. Nothing else exists, and this is what makes the kind of composition theorem strong. But the downside of this is that the UC theorem only holds for what we call subroutine respecting protocols. So mean that protocols where no subroutine of any party running the protocol talks to anybody else except subroutines of the same protocol, right? I don't have subroutine of one protocol instance actually talking to another subroutine of another protocol, or maybe directly with the environment or anything. right? So there is a protocol should be structured, well structured in this sense. And this is important in for the theorem to work. It just couldn't work otherwise. And therefore, you cannot model in this model that I described before protocols that share subroutines with other protocols, right?
Can you give like a concrete example of something non-subroutine
inspection? Yeah, we'll get there in a minute. So in particular, if we model common reference string as a subroutine, that's the way it's been modeled up to now, actually continue to model now, then these protocols were commit proof to me in zero knowledge, and I proved to Tal, both protocols use the same subroutine. So that's exactly a non-subroutine respecting protocol.
The subroutine is a string.
The subroutine, if you want to model CRS and use the models, so it's the entity that chooses the string and gives it to everybody to build the answer.
Does it mean more generally an ideal functionality
with the same SID? So it's the same instance of the functionality with the same local state that talks to different SIDs, to different instances of protocols. Okay. So, but when you look at things this way, it becomes obvious why things don't work. But anyway, so just to say how UC security, the original UC security works with setup. So now the parties have a trusted setup, which we model as a subroutine, right? Common reference string or PKI or whatever. And this setup, since the protocol is subroutine respecting, as I said, only talks to these protocols, right? So that's how the real model of execution changed. The ideal model bit doesn't change at all because typically the trusted party code doesn't talk to the setup at all. Let's assume that we have a zero knowledge protocol that uses a common reference string. The knowledge functionality doesn't talk to common reference. It doesn't even know there is a common reference thing. The only thing it does is just what we described before in terms of the relation from the zero knowledge. So in the ideal process, there is no setup at all. And in fact, in the simulation, the simulator incorporates the setup in its belly, right? So he has to somehow mimic the setup. He basically, if you talk about common reference string, he chooses reference string, and that's whatever it wants with it, right? This is how it comes up. How this is comes from the definition. So this is how UC looks with setup. Yeah.
Can you explain the same thing if you just take the subroutine and make part of the program, make part of the program that parties execute? For example, the CRSS could be embedded in each.
Right.
In each program, and then can you say the same?
Yeah, but the point is that the point is the CRS is the same reference string that everybody has. So everybody has to have the same string.
Yeah, but then we cannot say the same argument why UC security fails. Because here, it was the subroutine and everyone is sharing a subroutine, but now no one is sharing a subroutine, right? So
right, but yeah, but if you let each party run this internally, then it would not be the same string, right? Someone have to have the same common random choices.
Or in some other way, you could think it as a part of the input which environment gives to.
So you could model reference string from as part of the input, but then and then you would run into these problems, but then you wouldn't be able to prove security also. Because in the proof of security, actually it's inherent that the simulator can mimic the common reference string. It can choose it as it wants, and it can know struggles about it, and maybe even not choose it to go to the right distribution, but to a closed distribution. And that's exactly the point there. That's how it's kind of inherent in the proof in the proof. And this is kind of inherent in the common reference string model even before the UCP took it up. I mean, from day one, the point in the common reference string model is to say that we trust reference string, therefore we don't have any guarantees on it. That means that in the simulation, the simulator can choose it himself and do whatever it wants to do. That's the rationale. And indeed, this rationale makes sense and it works. The only thing that it doesn't work that is what happens with many different protocols use the same reference string, and then you get this transferability issues, invalidity, stuff like that. As long as it's true that each reference string is only used for single protocol execution, this modeling is fine. Okay. So this is how UC looks with setup with data. And the question is how to extend the model to capture shared subroutines, right? So we want to actually now extend the model so that we can actually talk about explicitly about protocols that share subroutines between them. So a natural way to extend it would be to lift the restrictions on the environment that we had before, and particularly allow the environment in the protocol execution experiment to allow the environment to interact with any number of any type of protocols, whatever they may be, and even when we just care about testing security of a single protocol. The environment can now invoke and interact with many other protocols. And also, we're going to allow protocols and subroutines to interact arbitrarily with each other. We just remove this well structuredness, hierarchical structure restriction. And otherwise, we just leave the definition the same. And in fact, this is what we call generalized UC security. But this is kind of, as you see, it's kind of a complex definition. The model becomes totally messy, right? So instead of just having one single protocol execution from before, we're going to have many executions. And here I just wrote two, but there are many of them. And they can all use the same trusted setup, and they all, in fact, can arbitrarily talk to each other, right? So that's the real protocol execution model. In the ideal process, what we're going to do is just we take this entire mess and just carve out a single execution of a protocol and replace it with a trusted part. Okay.
So, why don't you allow the trusted setup to talk directly to the environment?
Yeah. Wait. So I'm just trying to model directly. In fact, you know what? It can.
Yeah.
It can. No, no problem. It's good. I just hidden that
place. That just seems simple.
Yeah. So the nice thing about this definition is that it clearly, obviously, captures the general case, right? We're not giving any simplifications here. In a sense, notional security becomes kind of like exactly what you want, and maybe composability becomes something trivial. But it's not trivial because there are other things to deal with. But it's clearly captures what you want. The problem is that it's very complex.
Would you have to know all the protocols beforehand to prove security?
So I would have to argue about them in the proof of security, right?
Yeah.
Because I have this one protocol that I'm trying to prove that realizes this trusted party. But in the proof of security, I would have to talk about any other arbitrary protocol that could potentially be generated.
Yeah.
So the mix makes proof of security ridiculously hard. Yeah.
Can you just talk about one execution where the environment also sees the trusted setup? Is that meaningful?
Yeah. You step ahead of me. I'm going to do that in a minute. So I'm going to have a simplified notion that is going to be equivalent to this one. But I just want to put this one up just to say this is. This is what we want. Then we're going to achieve it using a simplified thing. But just one thing before I go there. One point I want to make here that in this model, when we talk about trusted setup, the trusted setup exists even in the ideal model, right? Remember before the trusted setup kind of disappeared when we talked about the ideal model. Here it exists. Or it's alive here, alive and well, and because it's talking to this other protocol, right? In particular, even the model, the simulator, has to deal with the trusted setup that they already exist here. It cannot just make it up as it wants, right? So it's very, this is a crucial difference from what we had before. Particularly, it cannot invent its own reference string and just tell the environment this is the reference string, because the environment actually knows what reference string is, but it's talking to it via the other protocol. Okay? So this is a crucial difference here.
So you're saying you allow things to share subroutines, but I'm trying to understand what do you define as a subroutine? Only trusted setup, or there are other things that are called subroutines?
So in general, every ITM. So we have to get into the technicalities of the model, but any ITM. So an ITM is a subroutine of another ITM. If it takes, if that either ITM wrote into the input tape of this subroutine, or if it wrote to the subroutine output tape of the other ITM, there's IO relationship between them. And ITMs can generate subroutines dynamically on the fly and stuff like that. So things just.
Oh, so you add all that to the model.
Yeah.
But
so
that's
yeah.
not in the picture, right? In your picture, the only thing different protocols share is the trusted setup.
Right. Because I tried not to do it so complex, right?
But
you're right.
You draw the
arbitrary lines here between between every two. Right, and you can think of this as a dynamic picture that the things generate as we speak. Yeah, okay.
So transferability can only happen if they are shared.
Transferability, say that again?
For example, the non-interactive neural is with the deep learning.
Yeah.
That's only if you use the same commonality.
So the attack that I had, the attack that I described before, I had to use the fact that it's the same reference string. Maybe the other attacks, I don't know. But that particular attack that I described used the fact that different instances use the same reference string, and it would be possible here, right? Because it's we have different instances that use the same reference string.
So if there is some transferability attack that
is not
here,
so if there is some transferability, So if there is no common setup between the protocols and the attack doesn't use common setup, then the original notion that you see already guarantees that you cannot do those things. What happens here is we are trying to deal with what attacks, those attacks that use the fact that too many different instances use the same setup. And what I'm saying is that if there was a transferability, but that's it's a good point, that if there was a transferring protocol between those two executions, then the protocol will be not secure, right? Because you would have a transferring protocol in the real-life model, and you could not have had the transferring protocol in the ideal model because this trusted party would not cooperate, right? Because this trusted party only talks to the actually parties that participate in this single instance. Right. So this is how you can see that how transferability is captured here by this definition.
So, Ron, I'm just saying that. Yehuda also defined his sort of version of general composability, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, the whole point of your definition is that you say, well, all the other protocols that are going on, you capture them inside the environment.
Right.
And so you're going to do the same thing here. You say, well, now I'm just going to capture the trusted party communication also with mm-hmm. to the environment.
Right.
And then you can simplify the same.
You're right.
So it's the same idea, but now applied also to the trusted setup, right? But
I'm saying that this definition doesn't have this nice property that you're describing, because it doesn't capture everything into the environment, because everything is explicit. You have to deal
right.
with all this mess of
the like
network.
Like
Yehuda's
general composability.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's the same thing there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 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 Okay. So... Okay, but as we said, this is a mess, so we want to do something simpler. So, in particular, we want to talk about things that you set up, which is typically one single additional functionality. So, one that we want to model the entire universe in a single protocol execution. So instead, we're going to go back to the old UC model, but we're going to, in addition, we're going to allow the environment to interact with only a single other entity other than the protocol instance, right? And that entity can interact also with the protocol. Okay, so there's the going back to the single instance, the environment can only talk to a single instance plus a single entity that interacts with the protocol and with the environment. And we call this notion externalized UC security. Maybe not the most meaningful name, but it's a name. What this is, so we go back to the single instance, and in addition we have this other entity, which here is the trusted setup, that the only thing that we have here that we didn't have before in the UC is that this line. This trusted setup talks directly with the environment, okay? And now this guy exists also in the ideal model, right? The trusted setup exists here and also talks directly with the environment. Okay?
So this means that those other protocols in the CRS model for non-interactive zero knowledge are just not secure. Under
are not going to be secure, yeah. In
because
fact,
the environment
have,
sees the string
result.
Or the trusted
yeah.
setup.
Exactly. Well, at least so far we know that those proofs will not work. That's what we can say now.
Okay.
That those proofs will not work, but those proofs actually use the fact that. And in fact, if we did anything meaningful, those protocols should not be secured protocols because we know that they are transferable, and we want to avoid that.
It almost seems like the transferability is a problem with the non-interactive zero knowledge, not with the CRS. That's the definition of non-interactive is that you have a string.
So as I said, it's just a warning sign. It's an early warning sign. So it's not the entire problem. As we said, we saw the other problems with the malleability of commitment and stuff like that. So we're going back to it because it's kind of a simple to explain example, but it's just an example.
I guess I'm not arguing with your definition. This makes perfect sense to me. It just seems to me that it will be even stronger impossibility without somehow, is my intuition. So.
Wait a minute. Oh, yeah.
So
Ron, they're coming.
Ron,
yeah.
how should we interpret all the protocols that were proven secure in the UC much better? What would they guarantee or do they guarantee anything or?
So
let's start with standalone with setup. What
yeah, so they guarantee security as long as the setup is used for a single protocol instance. Or in the case of Juicy, as long as the setup is used only for those bunch of protocols that were designed to work with that setup.
But there is a philosophical problem because the simulator is given, if the string is up in the sky, the simulator is given information that is not available in the even in the ideal world, given the string up in the
no,
sky.
No, but I claim that as long as you know that there's nothing else exists, but no, nobody uses the
it's like unbounded simulation, you can say. I don't see in what way it is better than unbounded simulation, for instance.
Are we talking about the case where nobody else uses the setup? The setup is just private among those.
Oh,
it's
a string in the sky.
No, we're not talking about it. In the string in the sky model, the UC doesn't model. So the way the UC models set up, the old UC uses the models setup doesn't correspond to string in the sky. Corresponds to string on the ground, string between your knees.
So in the subsequent this model, you should switch from the string in the sky to
yeah.
string in the ground.
I describe it differently. You see, the Arcturus work is you have a trusted guy through the string for you, and then you shoot him. That's really the model that we've been talking about, not string in the sky.
But then why can't this guy kill correlated strings and give to different guys, and then we'll have information theoretic security?
The guy shoots himself.
Why is
So I'm saying we're assuming a physical assumption, we're implicitly using a physical assumption that there is a reference string that only you and I, or whatever, the people that we want, have this reference string. And we can go tell other guys.
Why can't the same entity that generated these strings and killed itself generate correlated strings and kill itself?
So we are assuming that it doesn't. That's the assumption.
I'm not saying to use it as a feature. This entity will generate correlated random strings, and then we'll all be happy. We'll have information theoretic security, and we'll have simpler protocols and stronger protocols and everything.
Maybe
there are some limitations, right? But if you generalize,
the less you ask for it.
Okay, so I'm not sure I understood your point, but maybe you take it offline. I'll try to understand your point. I'm not sure I understood it.
But my point is that if you say the string is not in the sky, it's generated by someone who gives it to a discrete set of parties and then kills itself, then I'm saying you can use this. Trusted setup in a more general way and get the stronger things.
Okay.
Yuck security. What happens with what access does the simulator have to the trusted setup? He has the same access as the basically, he gets whatever access the corrupted parties, the adversary controls, would have.
That depends on how you write the setup functionality.
But like in the public key version, it would be pretty much the same as what was in the previous papers that the simulator is allowed to ask for the private keys of.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Parties.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll get there, but we'll get to specific setups and try to justify them. On the general, on the model level, this is just a setup, and you whatever you write there, and then how this transforms to reality, that's your problem.
But then why can't you just put the trusted setup inside the environment?
Yeah.
Is
that again?
What's the difference between this and between like combining the trusted
That's actually a very good point. It's very different because here I'm guaranteed that this guy runs its code. If the environment, who knows what it's doing? Because I'm quantifying of all environments. So this, okay.
Yeah.
It could, you know, it's you write the code of it.
No,
so
if you differentiate them, they won't be impossible. Right? The cluster setup, when parties in this protocol ask to do
so
one,
in particular, you could write the setup such that it will, you could write the setup to be the old CRS, which is just give the CRS to the parties running the protocol, refuse to give the CRS to anybody else. Then you're back to the old CRS.
So could you answer based on
then it will not be impossible.
But could you answer based on who the corrupted parties are?
The model allows you to. I mean, so you write the setup, and then you have to argue that this is actually what corresponds to some realistic or unrealistic realization.
So you could make it an angel.
Yeah.
He can use some logic.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe interesting dinner. Okay. So to say how we relate those to the permissions. So we're going to say, just to formalize what I said before, so a protocol is if subroutine perspective, if no subroutine of a party running the protocol takes I.O. or have I.O. relationship with any subroutine of, any non-subroutine of P, other than a single instance of F, function F, functionality F. Can be any other protocol in general. So one theory is that if the protocol is F subroutine respecting, that means that, again, so the only only way to break the hierarchical structure of the protocol is by calling to single instance of F, then FUC security is equivalent to GUC security. So the simplified version is equivalent to the general version. This may look immediate, but it actually takes work to prove it. Specifically because this talks about single instance, this talks about multiple instances, so in particular, this proof actually incorporates in it the decomposition theorem already. You need the hybrids, you need everything there. But anyway, nonetheless, it's true. And just a special case is that if the protocol is completely subroutine respecting, so there's no breaking of the hierarchical structure, then GUC security collapses back to original GUC security. Okay, and I didn't write it, but always GUC security implies UC security in any case. But it's obvious from the way it's described. Okay, so that's general results about GUC security, and also the decomposition theorem. As before, the universal composition theorem works as it did before. So with respect to GUC security. Okay. So now that we did that, the general things, let's go back to the CRS model and see how we define it as in these models. So just recall what the CRS functionality, we already said it. So you choose a string from the given specified distribution, and you give it to the adversary, and then whenever a party asks for it, you reply with a string. So the UC interpretation of that was that only parties in the invoking protocol get the string, right? Because it's a subroutine of some protocol, and the protocol is subroutine respecting, so only give it to your protocol. The GUC interpretation would be you give to any party, you can get the string. And the easiest interpretation is that the environment can get it straight, right? So the protocol and the environment. Okay? So so that's the that's would be the interpretations. And then we have impossibility results, right? So the original, the only possibility results for F for the commitment functionality holds even with respect to this GUC version of the CRS model, right? So not only those protocols that we know don't work, you can't realize the commitment functionality in, even if you have CRS in this model. So the CRS doesn't work. And it can be extended, right? So it's, so basically, we didn't go through all the motions, but I'm pretty confident all those impossibility results would work the same. Well, I don't know. I'm not putting money, but definitely zero original T, I know about these. And we all can also, it also can be easily extended not just to the CRS model, but any model, any setup, it only gives public information. Whatever information it gives to everybody else. So any such setup would not help. Even run. Okay. So the good news is that this notion actually does seem to capture something good, since we know that all those protocols in the CRS model are inherently bad, they are transferable. So we are ruling out bad things. So that's good. But the bad news is how can we hope to realize, say, the commitment functionality with any reasonable setup, rather than maybe the commitment functionality itself? Because the proofs actually use, in an essential way, the fact that the simulator can rig this setup. Right?
But what about the thing with CKI?
Okay, so
can
but
prove it secure here?
In, okay, so let's switch one. Let's get there.
The proof in that does not use.
Your
joint work.
Right. Some protocols don't get that. Actually, some of the protocols in that paper are going to be GUC secure. static corruptions. Yeah. Although the modeling doesn't guarantee the protocols are.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so what we show is we can regain the general realizability even with GUC security, considering two setups. So one setup called secure registration. So it's something which very much like the setup in the Barak et al. Paper, but except that we have a single setup for all protocols, whereas there it was a game. Because it was all UC, it was a setup per protocol instance. So what's the setup? So when the party registers, so the functionality chooses a public key and secret key, and anyone can get the public key of any registered party, and corrupted parties, that's kind of, it's, the paper takes it, right? The model takes it. It's not clear how to interpret it, but you can write it in the model. Corrupted parties can get their secret keys, right? So if you are corrupted, you get the secret key, otherwise you can't. Okay? And again, the important difference between that and the same code, same text written in BCMP is that there it was per instance, and here it's one per the execution. Yeah.
Did you say that honest parties cannot get their?
Yeah.
How would they hear it? You're honest, and what do you hear?
So you hear, when you ask for a secret key, you don't get it.
But how would it hurt to let them get it? Because they're honest.
Because if you get it, then you wouldn't be intuitive. But you're honest, but you want to guarantee composability with arbitrary protocols. So those arbitrary protocols will tell those honest parties to do weird things with the keys, with the secret keys, like exposing them. So because we're talking about the same key that's used not only for my protocol, but for other ones. I want to save the answer parties from themselves. Because they are running protocols they have no control.
Can you explain that again? Sorry?
So again, the question was why not give honest parties the keys, because they're honest, they won't do anything bad with them. I'm saying they might do bad things with them because I want to guarantee composability with arbitrary other protocols where those other protocols use the same setup, the same keys. And since those other protocols are arbitrary, you have to quantify over all such protocols. I have to consider those protocols that will tell the honest parties to publicize a specific key or something. So I want to prevent that. So I want to not give honest parties access to the secret keys. So the question is, how can they do something useful without access to the secret keys? But that's a problem we can deal with. Yeah. They were hands. Lunch. Anyway. So.
But inherently, those parties in the protocols are not allowed to ask for the secret key of this study, right?
So I'm saying that I'm having one setup for all protocol instances, and this one public key per party for all the protocols this party is running, and there is one single secret key for that public key, but the party doesn't have access to that secret key. So, you know what? Since it's let me skip to the reflections, but I was going to discuss it in a minute. But since people are interested now. So I'll go back to this, I think, later. So the question is how to interpret the provision that only corrupted parties can obtain secret keys. As I said, it's something that can write on paper, can write in the model, what the hell does it mean? So one way to look at it is that, so on the one hand, the protocol instructions cannot use secret keys, right? So the protocols for honest parties cannot use a secret key. Secret keys are not part of the real life model, just only part of the analysis in some sense, in our imagination. On the other hand, parties cannot trust other parties to not have the secret keys, right? Because bad parties can have secret keys, so when I interact with you, I cannot trust the fact that you don't have a secret key, because you might, because you're bad. Okay, so I cannot hinge my security, okay? So in particular, when I do transferability, Tal cannot trust the fact that I don't have a secret key, therefore when I prove to her that either statement is correct or I have a secret key, she cannot believe the theorem. Because I might have a secret key. That's what it means.
So how does your example when go through, like, you give a counterexample that some of the protocols might ask the honest party to reveal the secret key.
But the honest parties don't have the secret keys.
Yes.
So they cannot reveal the secret keys.
Yes, so
if they're corrupted, they have the secret keys and they can reveal it, but that's an definition, but then they're corrupted.
So like, what is a good counterexample?
For?
Where we can give the... So for example, if I just give the secret key to the honest party, how does it hurt? Is there a good example?
Yeah, because there's another other party is running on the side, another protocol that tells the party just publicize it.
No, but they cannot, right? Because... Yeah, it is assumed that protocol instructions cannot use the secret key.
Right. No. So that means that this is how the model works. Parties don't have access to the key, so that's why we're okay. If we had access to our keys, then
in particular, this wouldn't have this kind of zero-knowledge style deniability.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying, because you're assuming the trusted setup doesn't give honest people keys, so they can't then deny it to someone else.
So,
but
what does it mean deniability? So honest parties cannot have the keys, but you never know if I'm honest or not, right?
Right, no, but in real life, you're saying no one ever gets the keys.
You can.
You could. So the question is, again, how are you going to realize it? So you're going to have to realize that via mechanism,
you're allowed
to get your keys.
Right. No, but then you lose the chosen protocol attack, right? Because then someone could say, well, if I'm going to get the keys, then I'm going to use them.
Chosen protocol attacks that are, you know,
very
follow the some policy that is very well specified.
No, but another policy could have been don't use a CRS.
No. So it can, if you want to think about real life, think about the post office, right? So
no, but
if you really
then if in one protocol you use the CRS and in another not, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Here is the policy for all protocols, never use the secret key.
But it's still chosen protocol attack secure against good protocols.
Right.
You can
have a safe protocol that has this. That
right, so those are good protocols. So protocols that don't use.
It's a part of
the
thing.
You
can define as a bad guy if you get your super
key.
Right.
Better is my aspirin.
No, but in real life, you do get it. You can't.
You will. You know, people like that. You see
the
key. You see the key.
There
would
be a great lunch.
No, but what does that mean in real life? Sorry, I'm there. Yeah, sorry. I have another role. So sorry. Yeah, let's take this offline.
So just to say that one way to interpret it in real life, you can say that there is a post office that publishes the public key, and you can go to the post office and get your secret key, and in secret and privacy nobody will know about it, but then you have then you get also to sign, you don't sign because it's not going to be deniable, but then you get to read this announcement that says, from now on your secrecy is not guaranteed or anything, or your security is not guaranteed.
So you can break your own security on it. So essentially when you're doing it, you can, but then you lose only your own security. You cannot break security with somebody else, but by going and getting a secret key, you break your own security and nobody else.
So you have a choice between security and deniability.
Yeah. No, deniability again anyway. Deniability again anyway.
You can feel like somewhere you can go and ask for a key, but then you know that means that anyone can break any code you participate in. And
right.
That
so as soon as you deny, you lose your security.
Okay, sorry. There is another setup that we can use, which is somewhat better. This other setup, instead of having key registration, we can have to go back to commutative string, but we've augmented a bit. So we have again one random string S is chosen from some given distribution and made available to all. Okay, but now we have this added trapdoor. So the post office has one public key that's posted, and it's short, and it's only dependent security parameter, and fucking up instruction, it's going to be just a public verification key of the signature scheme, never mind. But then the corrupted parties can go get personalized secret keys that derived from the string and their identities, kind of identity-based stuff, looking stuff. So I can go and get my secret key that corresponds to that public key in my identity, and then again I can break my own security and etc. So we are almost at the commutative string, but not quite. So the question again is how to interpret security. We talked about it, and then this notion of minimality of the augmented CRS. So it's almost the same as CRS because the interface of the honest parties is the same as the CRS. In fact, it's the honest parties are concerned, they only have a CRS. And the possibility is to convert it by giving the secret information only to bad parties. So it's not part of the protocol as a seat, it's part of our experiment.
So it's very counterintuitive that you get around the possibility
result
by giving more power to the adversary. In this new definition, adversary could just simulate what adversary.
But it's a simulator.
Ask for the
but you give more power to the simulator, actually. Yeah.
Both
both the adversary and simulator, but yeah. So I kind of, yeah, but you're right. You're right. Anyway. So, yet more reflections. So one other thing to say, but this kind of non-intuitive discussion, but still I think it makes sense to talk about it. So when you talk about, you look at how proofs would look in this notion, with GUC security with these type of setups, then the simulator is very, very limited. It cannot control the setup information of uncorrupted parties. This is chosen out of control of the simulator. It only learns the secrets of the corrupted parties when the environment learns them, corrupted parties learn them. It cannot rewind the environment. The only thing you can do is affect the cointosses of that corrupted parties. So in a sense, it seems like almost as good as simulation in the plane model. But this is what simulation in the plane model would look like, right? This is what it does. Only affect the cointosses of the uncorrupted parties. So it's in a sense, it's kind of in an informal sense, it's almost as good as and as simulation in the pen model, but it's not, of course, what we have set up and we have impossibility result. But this is kind of a side issue. Okay, so the main theorem is that assuming dense crypto systems there exists an ACRS habit protocol for GUC realizing any well-formed functionality, even for adaptive corruptions with no erasures, as long as the corruptions are PID-wise, Bodyman PID-wise, that all the parties that have the same PID are corrupted together. Right? So party is a party identity, right? So it corresponds to our notion of corruptions in the real life, right? So if I'm a bad guy, all the subroutines, all the protocols that I'm running are corrupted the same, or remain uncorrupted. So that's the result. And there is a construction that we can spend another hour on if you guys want to know. Should I talk about construction?
evening session.
That's some nice idea. So just to say that the BCNP protocols actually are one of them is secure for non-adaptive corruptions in the key registration setup. It works. And then you can deal with adaptive corruptions by using some special coin tossing protocol that allows to choose an appropriate CRS per commitment. And the CRS is going to be this way if the commit is corrupted, and that way if the receiver is corrupted, etc. It's kind of a cool protocol, but I won't have time to talk about it. And if you want to go back to the ACRS, you know, the single short reference string, we are using this identity-based trapdoor commitment schemes, which are commitment schemes that they have again public once it's more short public key, and the each party has a trapdoor that you can allow the simulator to equivocate per party, although the commitments are binding. Never mind that. And just to say a word on further research. So we dealt with how to deal with CRS. Or whatever, not CRS, but general protocols, or PKI for general computation, given authenticated information, authenticated communication. But how to, now let's look at those protocols for achieving authenticated communication, how to deal with those, again, with this public setup, global setup. So, in particular, how to capture deniable authentication with public setup. In fact, even a harder question is how to capture standard authentication protocols that are not meant to be deniable. They just want to do the plain old the authentication, those those practical protocols that we have UC proofs for them, IPsec, whatever, ISO protocols. They just want to do plain key exchange pair authentication, but they use the UC formulation of setup for setup that's specific for protocol instance, and how to argue about them with global setup. So we can argue, you can say that in reality, for authentication, setup is actually used per protocol, it's not used in a global way. You have different public keys for different protocols, but what if not? Can you say anything about it? And when you look at the proof of the existing proofs of those protocols, those existing proofs actually use the fact that the simulator can generate the public key of the signature scheme so they can see him sign it. And so how do we get around? So that's a good set of questions there. And then more generally, okay, so we have to live with setup. If you want to do UC, that's the fact of life. Can we find any other setup assumptions except for those that we know that can be more readily implementable and more easy to use or something? So in particular, those guys, Hofheinz, Miller, and Unruh have a different setup. They basically have this setup that talk about this signature card. So the German government apparently is mandating that every person will carry a signature card, which is supposed to be hardware secure, in the sense that untamperable, and the public key is going to appear somewhere in some files. And they show that if you have such a signature card, then you can do security and general protocol, which is again, it's a cool alternative setup assumption. So from a modeling point of view, from our point of view, it's very bad because it requires the ideal functionality to interact with the protocol at every step of the protocol instead of CRS where you just give it to the beginning and forget about it. So it has to be actually, the setup has to be active at every point in the computation. But on the other hand, it's nice because it's in your pocket and you may trust it more. So it's a different type of setup assumption. So can we have other things like that? So I think it's another good, nice direction to find problems in. That's it.